There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. Of course, that's part of the 55 hours a week of podcasting we do around here. Hopefully, you check it out through the website or some of the apps out there, the platforms. But best way to do it, the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app available over at Google Play and at the App Store for Apple folks. Just look for FM TALK 1065. Don't put a point between the 6 and 5. You'll see our logo. That's us. Download it and get that app. And that's just the beginning of what's available with the app. We'll talk more about that coming up later on in the show. Plus, we'll do what I mentioned with Jeff, the Senate approving the bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure plan. Big win for President Biden with Republican votes on this. But the question is what happens when it goes into the House of Representatives. But we will dig into some of the stuff we came up with yesterday out of that infrastructure bill that's not specifically a road or a bridge. It's mileage tax and required breathalyzers in vehicles by 2026. We'll talk about that coming up in hour number two. Actually, I could probably talk about this hour with our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, joining us for Ask the Sheriff. Hey.
Glad to be here, Sean. Thank you.
Good to have you in here. So, yeah, that's one of the things they rolled out here is in the infrastructure bill, it's like on page 1700 mm-hmm. of, you know, and it would be to require, and the language is like, It seems harsh in that it softens it, but it basically to compel through the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, compel auto manufacturers by 2026 to have breathalyzers installed in vehicles to be able to start them.
That was a surprise to me. I've never heard any discussion of that whatsoever.
Right.
And just all of a sudden,
like these aren't people that are like drunk drivers and get the prohibitions. These are just like if you go buy the car, like here's your infotainment system, here's your rear view mirror, here's your breathalyzer.
So I've got to pay a couple hundred or a few hundred dollars extra for my new car because of the drunks on the road.
It's got to be what it seems like to be in here.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I appreciate requiring people that are convicted of DUI, multiple DUIs having it, but for the normal person, why would you make their car be so expensive? I had that much more, but hey.
And then I said, just me being me. I said, well, what if somebody wants to drink beers on private land to go ride around the woods?
Yeah,
I mean, what are you going to do?
What's
there?
Next? Put it on your four-wheeler?
Yeah, I mean, that's, what are they going to do here? A lot to talk about. Good to have you in the studio to discuss. First of all, we'll talk about the situation we're in with the Delta variant, what's going on in Mobile County, and how it affects you in the Sheriff's Department.
Well, it's hit us pretty hard in the last 2 weeks. I guess week before we had in the administration offices, we had a number of our people got infected and were really bad sick and they're still recovering. And so
they're okay.
There's a couple of them are real serious but they're recovering so it scared us and we kind of went into I call it temporary lockdown. We start, let's get out of these offices. Let's not congregate. Let's keep distance and
right.
You can work from home. And so we did that, and we've, slowed it down, I guess. But now I think we have 13 deputies out right now that are on either have it or are quarantined because they've been associated with somebody having it. And then the jail, it's blowing up in the jail.
That's where I was going to go next, yeah.
We have 50 inmates right now. And the deputy warden I spoke to this morning, he spoke to some people in Florida
50.
With jails. Yeah, 50. And they're doubling in their numbers every couple of days in other jails. And so we're expecting it just to blow up. I mean, 50 is a lot, but we expect to double that in a couple of days.
You know, we talked about this so much last year
mm-hmm.
with this and how y'all navigated this. At least, I guess, we had some training last year for this year, but it's still, I mean, what a challenge.
We did so well last year, but I'm telling you, this new Delta variant is so much more potent. You know, we were able to, I mean, we had a lower rate in the jail than the common population, as you remember. But this new Delta variant, I think you walk through the room for 15, 20 seconds and you catch it or something. And so it's spreading like wildfire. The only good thing I guess we can say is that we do know how to better treat it than we did the previous, you know, and it's...
What happens at the jail if, okay, so somebody has it and they get, I mean, obviously they're spreading it. I mean, but somebody gets sick to a point where y'all can't deal with it. Do they go to a hospital or what?
Yeah, if they get so sick, we send them to the hospital. But we have a medical wing that where they treat them in, you know, in-house. But then when they get so bad, inmate, whether it's the COVID or something else, we send them out to the hospital. And depending on how sick they are, we'll of course, send guards with them and have to guard them 24-7. And that's a, you know, a difficult situation.
Holy cow, yeah.
It costs a lot of overtime and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you had... I mean, you got 50 now, but if that, I mean, that could be something that we talk about overtaxing hospitals, but overtaxing, I mean, if you have deputies that are out as it is, and people that, you know, in corrections that are out, and then you have to put deputies with people at hospital, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, so we've encouraged all of our employees to get the shot. We don't mandate it, and a number of them have gotten it, a number haven't. Of course, I was told this morning by Captain of Patrol that a huge number of our employees that previously did not get the shot are now getting the shot.
I hear that everywhere.
Exactly. I've seen it, and you see the numbers up everywhere. But the problem is they're getting it now, but they need to go in hibernation. If they get the shot, they need to go in hibernation for 4 weeks, but we can't put them in hibernation.
Right.
So, I mean, if you get the shot today, you're still at risk for another 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know some people that got the shot.
But you got to have those people. I mean, you got to have those people working.
We need them, yeah. So, you know, we've discussed some possibilities of letting more people out on own recognizance and stuff like that, and we may just come to that point where we have to.
Well, where are we with the situation where the state
The state department is slowly getting their prisoners, so they've helped us out.
And fill people in what was going on.
Well, they for a year and a half, they stopped taking all the state inmates, people that had been convicted in court, sentenced to the penitentiary, and they normally will stay in our jail for 30 days, and then the state will accept
them. Then they go to prison.
And they go to prison for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever. They just stopped accepting them. So we were every time somebody got convicted, 1 month, 2 months, a year later, we still have them. And so it exploded. Our population went from like 1,200 and something to 1,500 and something. And these were inmates that needed to be, over 400 needed to be in state penitentiary. So now they finally started taking them.
The tab of ADOC and the responsibility of ADOC, but they were in your jail.
That's right, exactly. And some of them were, you know, you're talking about the most serious of offenders, murderers and armed robbers and stuff like that, many of the most violent prisoners. And so they're the toughest ones to maintain in the jail because, you know, they don't have nothing to lose by assaulting another inmate or assaulting a corrections officer. I mean, they know they're looking at 20 years to life. And so what do they got to lose but to cause us problems? And, you know, constantly dealing with those bad apples.
So we could be, do you think, heading there again on, you think it's going to slip? I mean,
I don't know. That's a good question. I've not heard anything, but now we give the shots to as many of the inmates that will accept the shot when they come in. And we've probably give them 1,200-1,500 people shots. You know, of course, we have a revolving door and people in and out. So, you know, we're competing with some of the best as far as issuing shots, you know. But and we bribe them. We give them a little snack pack if they'll take the shot.
Right.
And so we're doing a public service, I guess, down there at the jail in addition.
People coming out of the jail are vaccinated.
That's right. And so the state will accept them if we vaccinate them. The ones that haven't been vaccinated, they're less likely, don't want to accept. So it's, you know, every day is a new challenge, and that's what we do. We enjoy it. We reflect back and say, hey, we got through this, and I call it COVID-2. We're going through COVID-2 now.
That's
COVID-1
right.
COVID-1 was pretty bad, but this is COVID-2, and it's real serious.
You know, if you're thinking about one way getting people out of the jail to prisons or whatever, the other side of it is the influx. And talking to District Attorney Ashley Rich last week on the show, back to shutdown.
Back to shutdown, and then we're concerned we have it so rampant now they may end up having to shut trials completely down. They're down
still
to like maybe
10,000 backlog of felony cases.
It's the most unusual times in my career. Who would have ever thought this? But it's what we do. But you know, the thing we don't want to overlook is the fact that you know, we have corrections officers working in that jail, and we have deputy sheriffs out on the streets dealing with these people, too.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge for all of us.
And I thought about it from the district attorney's perspective, wanting to get justice for people. But, you know, from law enforcement side, you arrest the person, the suspect, you know, that has been hurting or scaring this person or whatever. And they thought maybe this goes through the system and that person is not going to be back anytime soon. Now you look at a situation where if they can bond out, they're not going to plea because it could be 3 years before they see a courtroom.
Exactly. They know it's going to take forever, so they're certainly not going to plea. They figure, hey, 3 years, a lot can happen.
So
witnesses die off, witnesses lose interest, and so it's a challenge for the DA's office.
There may be a lower conviction rate because of that going forward?
Yeah. 3 years, a lot happens in 3 years for a lot of people. People move away, take new jobs, go out of town. They're not going to come back.
And my fear is also for those victims that person gets back out on the street.
Yeah, we see it all the time, you know. How many times, you know, you see somebody and you say, well, look, this guy's been arrested 20-something times. Some national news story there or two ago where that person had done something, had like 25 arrests. Like, what in the world were they doing out?
How often, and there's that part, like the knives law was addressing and all that.
Yes.
But like the retribution part, too. You know, like the bad guy hurts the good person.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all make an arrest, get the suspect, and they go. But then they get back out. How often do they come back and threaten, you know, the people they hurt in the first place? Is that common? Is it uncommon?
I would say it's probably a little uncommon. It certainly has happened, and we've had, you know, over the years, I can think of cases where witnesses were murdered. But it's less common. It's not as common as what we might would think it is. The greater challenges are, like you said, somebody dies, witnesses leave, witnesses lose interest, victims lose interest. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to be bothered with, you know, I've moved away. I don't have to worry about him robbing me again. You know, years ago, I used to keep track with, like, crime in New Orleans, and you used to have all these muggings and robberies on the streets of New Orleans.
Yeah.
But they're all out-of-towners. So people get robbed, but, heck, they're glad to get back to,
right,
you know, that's just Mississippi or Tennessee or Georgia. Said, well, I ain't going back there ever again. And so the guy that they might have arrested walks.
And then goes and does it again.
That's right, over and over. As long as they keep getting people from out of town as their victims, you know, why would you want to go back to New Orleans and testify against somebody if you already got robbed once?
Yeah, no reason. It's not good for tourism, but, yeah, it's good for those suspects. All right, I want to talk about well, we can go to the break here in a second. When we come back, though, I do want to talk about your department, the needs of expanding or not expanding on the border. We're going to talk annexation, but also the challenges. You have said what it would take for the sheriff's department to fill the role in the PJ, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The number of people. I know we recently have talked about Sims and situation. Maybe that frees up some more officers, but what does that equal kind of when it comes to? So we're talking about the politics. Got city elections coming up, of course.
Absolutely.
On the 24th, and then the discussion of annexation, and then the law enforcement public safety side of this.
Yeah, you know, it's a challenge.
I mean, what?
Big challenge.
What happens? I was just driving in the PJ earlier today thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And also your questions for Sheriff Sam Cochran at 343-0106. You can hop on the phone line, 343-0106. Also, use the text line if you'd like at 343-0106. And also, we have the TalkBack feature if you're using the brand new FM Talk 1065 app. If you're there on the front page, you'll see the microphone icon. If you hit that, record us a message. It sends it right here, and we can get it played during this hour. It's your chance to ask the sheriff, Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest right here on Midday Mobile. All right, coming right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and it is your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest, and talking about a whole bunch of things here. We'll get into annexation here in a second. Some questions here about COVID and the jail Sheriff, how many inmates have died from COVID in the jail? Have you had any deaths?
Not a single one.
Okay.
And, you know, ironically, early on I said, what's the average age of an inmate? It's like 28 years old. And so, you know, the COVID one, you know, young people weren't dying from it. And so I think that's the reason why, because the average age is of these young bucks.
Right. They weather it better.
That's right.
You don't get elderly
right.
like me.
This new COVID, you know, it's affecting the young people more so than ever.
I think that's because the older people got vaccinated.
Yeah, that's one argument or one situation, but I don't know.
I'll say, watch this. This is, you know, and I'll talk again about this with Dr. Murphy. Like, I know what the science and the national stuff is saying, but I only know what's in my world. And I thought it was four yesterday, and by the end of the show when I was talking about it, it's seven people that I know, four, but three family members, a super close friend, and some other friends as well that were listed here that I know, seven of them, that were vaccinated and still got it.
Yeah, we're seeing. And some of these deputies have had it and had it really bad recently, or shoot, they're strong. I mean, they're healthy as can be, but it took them down.
Yeah, it's this thing. There's some unknown that one day we'll look back in the rear view and understand why it hits people harder than the others. But the people that have pre-existing conditions or underlying conditions, we get that. But I mean, out of the friends I've lost, I've talked about on the air. I'm not talking about this recent thing. It's just people. Nobody got to the hospital. Mm-hmm. They were vaccinated and they got better fairly soon. Mm-hmm. But they got it still when they were vaccinated. But you know, obviously, you know, I've lost a couple friends and some of them were younger. One was 4 days different in age than me. So, it gets your attention. All right. This annexation question, I want to bring two things together. So we'll talk about what's going on. We've got city council to me, and you probably have longer memory than me, but I don't remember 27 people vying for city council seats.
Yeah, I've never seen that many.
Okay, good, because I never have either.
But I've lived it I've worked for the city for 31 years, and I've kept up with it for the 15 years since I've been away, and I have never seen that much interest in city politics. So it's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, we'll have some new blood, new ideas.
No matter what, we're going to have a change.
Exactly, for sure. And so I think that's really good. A lot of new energy, people with new ideas coming in, and we need it. We need it bad.
And we talk about this annexation thing, you know, if we hadn't had, you know, we're going to have a change no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth tackling this again because it's not asking the same question to the same people.
That's correct. We know where the other people stood. Now we've got new people coming in and we want to know where they stand. And of course, this annexation, as you well know, is very important to me, not as a sheriff, but as a lifelong native Mobilian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city's been dying for 40-something years, 49 years we've lost population. Other cities around the state, around us, on the Eastern Shore, have grown like crazy. We've been stagnated, and a lot of it has to do with city politics and politics by the council members. And so now I'm excited that we've been able to bring that to the forefront of the elections, and every single candidate in those seven districts have been asked in debates and in open forums, what do you think about annexation? And quite frankly, it looks like more so than not, they're all have a very positive attitude towards it.
Yeah, and what we're and if people
have somebody if somebody says, oh, I'm not sure, well, that's bull maloney, you know.
Right.
If they say, well, I need to study it,
you had time to study.
Exactly. That's not a big issue to study.
Right.
You know, the facts are there, and so if somebody gives you that answer, you need to say, don't vote for them.
I know we've talked about this so many times, and the station's talked about it, but let's reset as well, though. The question posed to the council is not whether to annex the folks in. It's to give them the right
to vote. Give them the right to vote and let them decide if they want to come in or not, be part of the city.
They could still say no.
That's right, and that's fine.
Right.
You know, but give them the opportunity, and Mobile's at a pivotal point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the people in the jurisdiction, 3 miles, there's like 80,000 to 90,000 people just within the police jurisdiction. Many of them want to come in, and we could become the largest city in Mobile. And imagine what that would do to the businesses and realtors when they say, look, Mobile's on the growth. You know, it's this growth spurt. People say, wow, y'all have grown, you know, exponentially in the last year or two or 3 years or something. That will help us.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that and what it means on the public safety side, too, with questions about PJ. Does that come back up? And if MPD pulled back from PJ and Sheriff's Department's got to fill in 80 or 90,000 people to serve?
That would be very problematic for us.
Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 1235 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Our guest in studio, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And talking about this annexation issue, and I want to get to the public safety portion of it too, but I look at Tim says, most of the areas that Mobile has annexed haven't seen any changes, maybe a few streetlights, which, by the way, new streetlight to Eliza Jordan and airport. Maybe a few streetlights at best. All they're doing is chasing retail stores that are trying to get away from Mobile. Now, that's been an indictment before on annexation, that it's just a grab for the tax revenue.
Well, that's what happened several years ago on in the previous administration. They didn't annex people. They annexed commercial businesses.
The gerrymandered line out to the Walmart.
That's right. It was a tax grab. And so that's why this gentleman saying hadn't seen any improvements with in the neighborhoods, because they didn't annex the neighborhoods. But we need people in Mobile. We need to grow Mobile. And
this isn't about
people.
I mean, because but you know this inside out. Is this about retail?
This current stuff's not.
Okay.
What in the past was.
It was,
there,
yeah.
There were several thousand people a year and a half ago, or whatever it was, nearly 2 years ago, wanted to annex and come into Mobile. It's one of the first times that you saw a hue and cry by the people wanting to come into Mobile. Now, many years ago under the Dow administration, I was police chief and stuff, we tried to annex some areas and people voted it down. And it was real close a time or two. But now, this time, there was a huge number of people that wanted, and there were some polls ran. It was running about 75-80% of people wanted to come into Mobile. I'm thinking, now's the opportunity. And unfortunately, in the city of Mobile, a 4-3 vote loses.
You know? Yeah, you have to have super majority.
Exactly, majority. So now, I'm excited that many of the candidates are saying they support annexation, and they, of course, they support smart growth. And so I think it would be, you know, you do a little at a time or something like that, but grow Mobile. And we need the people. We would have got more in public safety grants had we surpassed the 200,000 population mark. It would not only public safety grants, but you'd have to think that it would also increase your public housing grants. You know, the grants are bigger as you grow.
So is that contrary to the argument that's made that we can't do this because it's going to cost the city, and the city right now, you know, needs to fix what it has before it goes and adds new people
to
a city?
That was a false narrative. I mean, you annex new areas where their infrastructure is new, there's less upkeep, and so in essence, what you're doing is you're making money off of those newer infrastructures because they require less maintenance. So the people get some city benefits, but also they're willing to pay the taxes. And of course, many of them are paying some of those taxes when they come into the city of Mobile and pay the sales tax, but you know, over time you would increase your revenue by property taxes.
Now, what on the public safety side? So, what happens if that does not happen, and there's a pullback of the police jurisdiction?
Well, yeah, if there was a pullback by the jurisdiction, it would impact the sheriff's office tremendously, because you know, if we had to take on an additional 60, 70, 80,000 people to police. You know, that would
compared
be a burden on us, because our tax revenues don't go up. We're in the county, our tax revenues are fixed across the county. So people moving in or out of the city would not impact the county at all. I mean, unless they move into unless the city pulls out, then we would have a problem. So, you know, and we work well with the city, you know, law enforcement. So I think Chris Elliott's bill that he passed last year, it's always been problematic to have what you call the jurisdiction where, you know, it's kind of like you're either in the city or you're out of the city. You know, we need a clearly defined line. This is where it stops. You're in the city or you're out of the city.
So, yeah, with the annexation, it would, believe, bring an end to police jurisdiction, that new city line would be, it would go city and then it would go sheriff's department.
That's correct, yeah. Because in the jurisdiction,
there wouldn't be
some
any
people
PJ.
Call us and some people call the city, and it's always been sort of blurred lines, if you would, and stuff such as that. But by going to doing away with jurisdiction, jurisdictions have been awful. In my earlier days on the police department, and the police department used to say, do not patrol the jurisdiction, just answer calls in the jurisdiction. I always thought, this is terrible for these people. They call us about a burglary, we write it up, but we don't do anything to try to prevent the burglaries because we were forbidden to patrol in those areas. And that somehow or another changed back in the, I guess, in the late mid-90s or early 90s or something like that. Maybe the late 80s, but in the 70s
also
and 80s,
patrol.
We were told do not patrol the jurisdiction.
Just go out there when you get a call.
Just write the report. Well, we were just doing it for insurance purposes. But eventually, we started saying, hey, if we're going to write the report.
For the PJ, let's PJ.
Yeah. And so then it got to people say, well, why are you patrolling there? Because they don't pay their fair share. Well, I don't know. And that's why we need clarity. To get away with jurisdictions.
Thinking about the area outside PJ and the domain of the Sheriff's Department, mm-hmm. what are your biggest issues right now? What do y'all look at? What crime trends any different, or is it?
Well, clearly the crime trends are different in the rural areas versus in the city. You know, mm-hmm. right now the city's going through an increased number of shootings and violence and all of that. Well, we're not really seeing that in the county, and of course sometimes we see maybe some spillover into the county, but for mm-hmm. the most part we don't have those issues. So what we have, are property crimes and things of that nature.
Have they changed for y'all, or just it's the same kind of things,
I think our biggest challenge is property crimes. And of course, during the COVID, everybody stayed home. Our property crimes went way low.
Yeah.
You know, people in the rural areas, they have guns in them homes.
Yes.
You start kicking my door in, and I'm going to respond with some buckshot or something, so people knew better than to kick a door in the county then. But now, as people have gone back to work, their properties are left, unattended, and so you have an increase in property crimes. We have a few shootings, a few murders a year, let me brag on this for a minute. We've solved every single murder since January of 2016 at Mobile County, 100% clearance rate. Not many people can say that. And if you go back 2 years prior to that, we had one that we didn't solve. But I credit our major crimes and our people in charge of it. They do an excellent job. They're the most talented bunch I've ever been involved with.
What a ratio. That's fantastic.
Knock on wood. I hope I don't mess them up. Probably, why'd you say that, Sheriff?
Yeah, I just want to knock on wood to keep people safe out there. All right. A lot of texts coming in here. Unnamed texter. Can I decline to have an officer run my firearm before or after I show my permit?
Yes. I mean, if you have a permit, there's no reason an officer should even seize or take your weapon unless there's some reason that some investigation where he has a right to disarm you while he's conducting an investigation.
Right.
But, and I've said this on your show before, that when you say you have a permit, an officer should not ask you to see the gun.
Right. And we've said this many times too, y'all. It's not the permit is not for the handgun.
Individual weapon. It's you can have a weapon. But there are some law enforcement agencies that use that as an opportunity to run a check on the gun and see if it's stolen. But unless there's probable cause to believe to seize that weapon, you don't. But the permit gives you the right to have that pistol on you or in your vehicle.
All right. Does the Sheriff's Department have jurisdiction on Dauphin Island?
Yes. We have jurisdiction everywhere in the county of Mobile, inclusive of the cities. But the cities, by law, the legislature gives them the city the opportunity to regulate. And so we back out of those areas, but we still have legal rights to go in there.
Yeah. So just if we're looking at it in map overlays, the Sheriff's Department covers the entire county. But on top of that, there's municipalities. And in those cases, y'all back out.
That's right.
Okay.
They become the first responders.
Let's see. If I'm not mistaken, it's against the law to discharge a firearm in the city limits.
That's correct. There's a city ordinance against discharging firearms within the city limits.
And that's what people worried. The person worried about, somewhere in the police jurisdiction, it changing where they wouldn't be able to shoot a firearm.
Yeah, that'd be correct. I mean, a lot of people. We've seen this over the years, where as residential areas merge into the county and they're in the county, but yet it's like a residential neighborhood.
Right.
That creates a problem. People have a right to discharge a firearm, and it's not a city ordinance against it. There's not a county ordinance, so it's not against law to discharge. The only thing we can do then is reckless endangerment. If they're discharging that firearm in a reckless manner, that would...
We've gotten calls about that when you're in here before. People say, my neighbor's out there shooting all day, down the privacy fence or something like that.
Yeah.
That would be disconcerting. What was the... There used to be some, and maybe I'm thinking it up, but there was a law like if you had 40 acres or something inside the city limits, you could...
That was something to do with dove hunting.
Yeah, dove hunting, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Remember that? There was where I remembered it was over there off 90 by the interstate, mm-hmm. that there was some place where they had 40 acres. I don't know, but I remember as boys, we all talked about that. They can hunt in the city.
Yeah, because there's always
I never got invited.
Why is it that there's always more doves in the city than in the county?
Bird feeders.
Them doves aren't crazy, are they?
Bird feeders. let's see. This texter says, include the citizens of Mobile in the annexation vote. The adjoining areas don't have a, quote, right, end quote, to join Mobile. They may have a desire to join. Let Mobilians decide if we want them.
Well, that's a fair argument. I agree with that argument that, we as citizens of Mobile, we should be able to dictate whether we, you know, allow somebody else to come in and reap the benefits of being in the city that you and I have paid the taxes for. So I guess my answer to that is we elect our city officials, our city council members, to represent us. And so they're in essence, making that decision for us.
But we don't keep people out of the city. Yeah, they get the benefits, but we don't keep those people out of the city because they're not residents of the city.
Yeah, we don't.
They work here, they shop here, you know.
Yeah, it's some of those arguments go on and on.
This is a good question. Paul asked, because we hear a lot about this in the national news, what does the sheriff think about local enforcement moving to more of a federal force?
Best governance, local governance. So, no. The answer to that is no. I mean, we work well with our federal partners, but it's a relationship, and we, you know, we keep it that way. It's just a relationship. It's not. We don't need to be federalized.
Isn't that a move? Some of these big cities are going to throw up their hands and say, "Well, you know, we can't do it." And it's probably because they disarmed their or defunded their police, and now they're going to say, "Hey,
federal government." And the prosecutors quit prosecuting against these things, and then all of a sudden they say, "Oh, we've got a gun problem. We've got crimes." You know, and then they want the feds to come in and help them. Well, you know, they should have took care of things themselves.
Yeah, think about that. The story from Chicago, the latest here, and not just the, well, most importantly, the murders, the loss of human life, but then the amount of guns are taken off the street, you know, and we point out that they have the, you know, one of the set strictest gun laws in the nation. Mm-hmm. They will argue the guns are coming in from elsewhere. Well, okay, but where those guns are coming in from, it doesn't have the highest murder rate in the nation.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah,
so I something kinda, is.
I
something
read that
is,
and they act like that. I don't buy that. That, you know, they're acting like, oh, they're trafficking all these guns into Chicago and stuff. I don't believe that.
But even if they did, let's say there's Gunville.
Yeah.
Okay, there's Gunville. Gunville, Illinois, or wherever, across the line,
right,
whatever. Gunville. And they've got all the guns in the world, selling all the guns in the world. Shouldn't that be, if the guns were causing this, shouldn't that place have the highest violence rate where the guns are, where they have more guns that they can get them to Chicago?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you've just got a lot of criminals that have been treated with kid gloves over the years, and now they've just gotten out of hand. And you see these prosecutors in some of these cities refuse to prosecute. Well, all those birds are coming home to roost in these cities like Seattle and Portland and Chicago and places like that. They have these what they call progressive prosecutors. But here's a problem we have, though, and we've talked about this on the show many years. For several years, we've had thousands, tens of thousands of firearms stolen out of automobiles where people do not lock the cars. Those guns are still out there. They're floating around in the hands of criminals. And it's one good reason why we continue to need the pistol permit, you know, where everybody has to have a check before they possess a pistol permit. Here's an interesting fact.
Yeah, you pull
Timothy McVeigh.
Yes.
All right, the bomber, Timothy McVeigh.
Oklahoma
he was stopped
City.
For a traffic thing, and then a search of the car revealed he had a firearm. He didn't have a permit. He was arrested on a permit, and guess what? He was in jail for 5 days because of that permit when all of a sudden they discovered he was the bomber. Had it not been for him being arrested for no pistol permit, what would have happened? You know, he'd have gotten out of jail.
Or never gotten that. That's how they got McVeigh.
Yeah, no pistol permit. So there's a good reason, and there's lots of good reasons why we need pistol permit. Nothing other than the background check before. It's a simple thing. Do a background check. $20 fee. I've never heard anybody argue that that's, you know, excessive.
Once again, but it's not a fee that you set.
Yeah, exactly. Once again, it's set by the legislature in 1984.
So there it is. Coming right back. We'll get your questions coming in on the text line, and we can do the phones as well at 343-0106. It's your chance to ask the sheriff, Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And as always, the questions pour in here in the last segment. So we're going to rapid fire through this. Our guest, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Y'all got lots of questions for him. So let's go first. unnamed texter. I probably missed it, but what about Sheriff Cochran's referendum to vote for the annexation? He's talking about the
Growmobile
yes.
thing. You know, I encourage the people that are voting for council members to ask that council member that's running for office if they support annexation. We need the Growmobile, and that's the best way to do it is through annexation. Grow from within, but also from without.
All right. Tom says, what about discharging firearm outside the city but inside the city's PJ, the 3-mile or so zone?
Yeah, some of the city ordinances apply in the corporate jurisdiction, and so it would be, I think, my best understanding is against the law within that 3 miles.
All right. Supermom says, why hasn't the fella, you use a nicer name than I would, Supermom, why hasn't the fella in the recent gas station attack been charged with assault? He slammed the female to the ground. I see robbery, but why not assault as well?
Okay, one of the elements of robbery is the use of force or the threat of the use of force. So that's included. The slamming of the lady makes it a robbery. Even you know,
so it includes, didn't have a weapon. It comes with
yeah, that's
assault.
Part of that's one of the elements of a robbery.
All right, Jim in Georgetown says, as a truck driver, I get pulled over by ALEA all the time for inspections. Instead of sulking, I talk to the troopers and have asked many questions. I asked one about my concealed carry and if I should show a permit along with my license. He told me absolutely not. He said he or anyone else didn't have any need to know if I'm legally carrying. What does the sheriff say?
Well, he's certainly correct. You don't have to show him your permit, but you do want to let them know that if they get you out of the vehicle and you have it, you need to let them know, hey, I have a concealed carry permit. Then they're going to ask, well, do you have a weapon on you? You're going to say yes, or if you have it on you or not. But you can show it. There's nothing wrong with showing it. And when you do show it, well, you're doing two things. You're letting that person know that I'm not a convicted felon, and I'm a reasonably person of good character by showing that permit. But you absolutely don't have to disclose that you have a permit or that you have a weapon in the vehicle.
I look at text here. A couple of them asking, are you endorsing in city council races?
I probably need to stay out of that, but okay. But certainly I support only those that support annexation. And you need to ask them that. And if they give you some BS answer about, well, let me study it, that's don't vote for them, because obviously the issues are very plain, very factual, and we need people that want to grow Mobile. We need Mobile to grow. We've lost population for 49 years.
All right, let's go to West Mobile. That's where Freddie is. Freddie, your chance to ask the sheriff.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say thank you, Sheriff Cochran, for your service to the county, and I appreciate what you've done over the years.
Sure.
Look forward
Thank
to
you.
A few more.
Thank you.
My question is how would you feel that if people had a concealed carry permit and were lost their gun due to an unlocked car, that they lost their permit?
You know, that's a difficult. I've heard that question before, and it's irresponsible, you know, on their part for not locking the car up if they had it in the vehicle and
how
it was stolen that way.
That?
But yeah, you know, hey, we all make mistakes. I mean, and so I believe in second chances, but you know, I you know, if I knew somebody had the second one stolen, I probably would do just what you say. I wouldn't give them another permit and make them appeal it to a judge or something. But we've just got to encourage our citizens. You know, at the end of the day, remember, they're a victim of a crime.
Yep.
So we just got to encourage everybody to do a better job, make sure they're going to lock the car up or don't leave the pistol in the vehicle anyhow. Because some vehicles are broken in. About 20% are broken into and about 80% are unlocked.
All right, Freddie, appreciate your call.
Yes, sir.
Because that's the thing I don't want people to miss. That person that had it stolen from them, they're a victim of crime.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the same thing comes up when a child gets access to a firearm and mm-hmm. ends up hurting themselves or somebody else. You know, that issue comes up. Shouldn't they be charged with something? And I've seen a few cases where maybe they've charged with reckless endangerment or something, but you've still got to show the intent to violate a law. And usually the person that has a tragedy like that, they suffer enough already.
That's for sure. All right, one insider question for you before
sure.
we wrap up. Y'all still getting ammo? You having trouble? Any advice to those of us that may be outside of law enforcement that might look for ammo?
I guess, thankfully, my people in charge of firearms are orderers.
They're like, hey, look back here.
Good. So we're holding our own, and if we see that we'll have a problem, we'll start scaling back. But no, our SWAT teams still shoot up a lot of bullets. They mm-hmm. still have the bird's eye view or whatever, so I trust in them, and we've got a good team of trainers and instructors in our training division.
All right, good. Well, maybe that starts to leak over to the private sector where, you know, it doesn't look like some grocery store shelves from Russia during Perestroika
yeah,
or something.
Isn't that something?
You know?
Yeah, when's this going to come to an end? I mean, people still talking about shortages. I mean, the
big
ammo,
time.
Ammo manufacturers ought to be just loaded.
Big time. All right, remind folks who online getting more information about the Sheriff's Department, where do they go?
MobileSO.com online. Follow us on Twitter. We're out there on social media. If you have tips, you know, want to turn somebody in, you know it's wanted, you can check, see if somebody's got a warrant on them by going to our website, and we'd love to hear from you if you know where somebody we can go arrest.
All right.
Follow us on Thug Thursday.
That's right. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, thank you.
Hey, I appreciate Sean, and especially your listeners. I always have some thoughtful, very good thoughts, information. I learn as much as I provide.
Very good. I enjoy that. Can't wait to see you next month.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on the way. Y'all stay right there.